Then he looks away. Graham, I say.
Yes?
Do we ever have sex? He coughs into his hand. Maybe I shouldn't have asked that. But I'm curious. We've been living like this for a year. I wake up most mornings not even knowing who he is, thinking I'm engaged to another man. It's hard to imagine we're making passionate love every night.
Tess.
His cheeks turn pink. It's very cute.
That's a complicated question.
I kind of think it's a yes-no question. Graham tugs on his tie, loosening it a few notches.
We don't have to do anything you don't want to do. I would never ask that of you.
But do we? I mean, sometimes?
Sometimes,
he says quietly.
On your better days, when you remember me.
I want to ask him how often that happens, but from what Camilla has told me, it seems pretty rare. I look at my husband, in his expensive gray suit that enhances his muscular build. There's nothing distasteful about him. Most women would find him attractive. But I've never been the kind of person who did one-night stands. I can't imagine making love to this man tonight. At the very least, it would require quite a lot of wine. Graham doesn't say anything else on the topic, and I'm grateful. Instead, he tells me about our honeymoon in Aruba. Apparently, I got my wish of going someplace hot with lots of beaches. He tells me about how when we got home from our honeymoon, our luggage was lost and the basement of the house was flooded. I assume he must have told me these stories at least a dozen times in the last year, but he doesn't seem to mind. After another hour, he glances down at his watch.
We better get back home. I still have work to do, but I can do it from my office upstairs.
Oh, sorry to keep you from your work. He grins at me.
Well, it's your company. I'm just stepping in
until my brain injury heals. Which, let's face it, will be never. I'm just glad I've got Graham to keep my company from falling apart. I might not remember my husband, but it's pretty clear I'm lucky to have him. Chapter 14. We walk Ziggy back to the house. I'm holding Ziggy's leash with one hand, and part of me wonders if I should reach out and take Graham's hand with my other one. It would make him happy, but I just can't make myself do it. Graham seems like a nice enough guy, but I still can't quite think of him as my husband, even though I'm trying. When we get home, a buzzing noise startles me. It takes me a second to realize my phone is ringing. Could it be Harry? No, it couldn't be. That whole thing with Harry this morning was just a delusion manufactured by my damaged brain. That phone number scrawled on my arm didn't work. And according to Camilla, he doesn't even live in the area anymore. He's got a whole new family now. Why would he be sending me text messages? Graham turns to look at me.
Is that your phone buzzing?
I put my hand on my pocket, nervous to take my phone out in front of him. Is it? He cocks an eyebrow.
Aren't you going to answer it?
Should I?
Yes, I would imagine so.
I take my phone out of my pocket, fully expecting to see that same number flashing on the screen. But instead, there's a name on the screen. It's Lucy. Graham grins at me.
Great. I'm going to go upstairs and get some work done. Why don't you talk to Lucy?
As my husband mounts the staircase, I click the green button to accept the call. A second later, a familiar, worried voice comes on the other line. Tess, are you okay? It's the first familiar voice I've heard the entire day. It's an effort to keep from bursting into tears. Lucy, I sink onto our extravagant leather sofa. It's you. There's a pause on the other line and then laughter. Yes, of course it's me. Who else would it be? I have no idea. I squeeze my eyes shut. It's been a rough day, Lucy. I know, sweetie. I could tell you were having a rough morning. I was trying to find a free minute to talk to you. Are you at work? I ask. Lucy was always bouncing from job to job, never quite able to find the right fit. Most recently, she had been trying her hand at being a pharmaceutical rep. Unfortunately, yes. Your husband is quite the slave driver. Then she giggles. I'm joking, obviously. My mouth falls open. You work for my home spa? That's right, Her voice grows softer. You don't remember?
I don't remember Lucy taking a job at my company. To be honest, I don't remember her being particularly supportive of the entire venture. When I talked about starting the company, she shook her head at me.
What do you know about starting a business?
When I explained Harry was going to be helping me, she was even less enthusiastic. Lucy was not the biggest fan of Harry Finch.
It just seems like this might end up being a big mistake, Tess.
I guess not, I mumble.
Oh, Tess, she sighs. You really are having a rough day.
I'm sorry I bothered you at work.
It's no bother. You sounded so upset on the phone. I just wanted to make sure you're okay. And I knew it would be a comfort for you to hear my voice.
She's right. Lucy and I were roommates in college, then again for several years after college until I moved in with Harry. She is my closest friend in the entire world. I'm even closer to her than I am to my father, who still hasn't returned my phone calls. Getting to talk to somebody I remember from my old life feels like a return to sanity.
I can't believe you work for my home spa. I shake my head, thinking of all the years that have gone by since my last retrievable memory.
Lucy, are you married? Do you have children? It feels strange to ask my best friend those questions, especially since I probably spoke to her yesterday, but I'm dying to know the answer.
No, haven't taken the plunge yet, Lucy says in that flippant way of hers. Men are just, you know how it is. Nice guys are too intimidated to approach me. They assume they don't have a chance. So the only guys who hit on me are the smarmy jerks, or the married guys.
She has a point. Lucy is gorgeous, but she never seems to have a boyfriend. Although Harry used to say about her,
she's not as pretty as she seems to think she is. Nobody could be.
So what's going on, Tess? Lucy asks. I'm assuming Graham filled you in on everything. You read the letter, right?
You know about the letter?
Of course I do. We thought it was better if you heard about the accident in your own words. It was an idea we came up with to help you feel more comfortable when you first woke up. Did it work?
I chew on my lower lip.
Sort of. So, what was rough about the day, then?
I debate if I should tell Lucy about the text messages. I hear the words in my head, and it makes me sound so crazy. I can't even bring myself to say it.
Did you have to go to a doctor's appointment? She asks in a low voice.
No, nothing like that. Lucy knows all about my phobia about doctors and hospitals, stemming from my mother's terminal cancer. She knows I have a panic attack every time I need to visit the doctor.
I'm fine. It was just so strange to wake up next to Graham when... You couldn't remember him?
Yes. I can't even imagine. Lucy lets out a long sigh.
But you should know, Tess. Graham is a good guy. He loves you a lot.
I guess.
And he's hot, right?
Yes. I can't deny Graham is hot.
Honestly, Tess, he's so much better than Harry.
A tear cascades from my right eye at the mention of Harry Finch, and I brush it away.
Lucy, where is Harry?
There's a sharp inhale of breath on the other line.
Tess, please tell me, please. I don't know. Before your accident, you hadn't mentioned him in years. But now, why did I break up with him?
She's quiet on the other line.
You just grew apart.
Grew apart? Lucy, we were engaged.
I don't know.
There's a vagueness to her voice that makes me think she's lying to me.
You called it off.
When?
Maybe 6 months after you got engaged? I can't remember. You just said you were glad you decided not to marry him before the wedding invitations went out.
But why?
I don't know, sweetie. He was just sort of a loser, you know? And you were so much better off without him. You were way too good for Harry Finch.
I wince at her comment. Harry and Lucy didn't particularly like each other, but they both tried to be civil around each other for my sake. And Lucy promised to keep the negative comments to a minimum. This isn't the first time she's informed me I was too good for Harry.
And then you started seeing Graham, she adds.
Yeah.
And he's great, an all-around wonderful guy. He seems nice. I chew on my thumbnail. He's been so kind to me today, and it's such a great story about how we met. The way he saved my life. Lucy laughs. Saved your life? What are you talking about? I frown. The story of how we met. Hadn't I told you before? Well, yes. It's romantic. I squeeze my eyes shut, wishing I could remember the day it happened. A car was going to hit me, and he pulled me out of traffic. Pulled you out of traffic? Lucy cackles with laughter. Who told you that? My fingers freeze on my phone. Graham told me. This morning. The laughter instantly dies. Oh. What are you saying? I press her. How did Graham and I really meet? Well, I can hear her swallow. He was an accountant you hired for your company. I thought that's how you met. But maybe he also saved your life. Or is it possible that you misunderstood? That scar on my right scalp throbs dully, and I press my fingers against it. Graham told me this morning that we met when he saved my life. I'm sure of it. I may not remember what happened yesterday, but the conversation with him is so clear in my mind. He told me he pulled me out of traffic just before a car was about to hit me. Didn't he? I pull up the sleeve of my shirt. I stare down at the number that I apparently fabricated completely. It felt so real, but it wasn't. I can't trust myself. I have to go, I manage. Tess? I'm sorry, I gulp for air. I need to talk to Graham about something. Let's talk later. Are you okay? Yes, I promise. I hang up the phone before Lucy can ask any other questions. My head is throbbing again. Maybe Graham was right. Maybe I do need to see a doctor and get another scan of my head. Maybe my brain started bleeding again. All I know is I can't trust any of my memories anymore. I close my eyes and remember that snippet I had imagined when Camila said I was having a seizure. The one that felt so real, where Graham was coming into my office to interview for a job at my home spa. I had thought it was a figment of my imagination, but it seems consistent with what Lucy just told me. Maybe it was an actual memory. I shove my phone back into my pocket and run up the stairs to the second floor. I start to go to the bedroom when I notice another door is ajar and the light is on inside. It's the bedroom right next to the master bedroom. When we bought the place, Harry joked, "That's where our firstborn will sleep." Even then, we assumed we would end up together for the rest of our lives. We both wanted children. Two or three, we couldn't decide. But Graham and I don't have any children. So what is in this room? Before I can second guess it, I reach for the doorknob. I'm tired of my entire life being a mystery. I want answers. Chapter 15. I nudge the door the rest of the way open. It's an office. Graham's office. He's got a mahogany desk set up with a black leather chair and a bookcase pushed up against the wall, stuffed to the brim with books and papers. He's got a laptop on the desk, and next to it is a picture frame containing a photograph of me and Graham. I pick up the frame. It's the two of us on a beach somewhere. My hair is long and thick in the photograph, and my skin is several shades darker than it is now. And I look happy. Graham's arm is around me, and we're both grinning for the camera. I replace the frame on the desk where I found it. The next item I pick up is a pen. I twirl it around and notice there's gold lettering on it. My home spa. I test the pen on a blank piece of paper on the desk. It writes nicely, good quality. There's a large drawer below the desk. On an impulse, I reach for the handle of the drawer and try to pull it open. It doesn't budge. It's locked.
Tess, what are you doing?
I jump away from the desk at the sound of Graham's voice. He's standing in the doorway to his office, his light brown eyebrows bunched together, staring at me. I wipe my hands self-consciously on my jeans. I was just curious. Graham's blue eyes are still on me. It's making me uncomfortable. Despite what Lucy said about him being a good guy, I don't know him at all. I don't know what he's like, And if Lucy never lived with him, she doesn't know either. Not really.
It's not your concern, he says. It's work papers, contracts.
Why is the drawer locked?
He shrugs. I don't want anybody stealing it. There are some sensitive documents in there, work-related.
I meet his gaze. Is he telling the truth? What's in this drawer that he felt the need to lock it? But I have something much more pressing to ask him. Were you lying when you told me we met when you saved my life? Graham blinks at me. For a moment, I am certain he's going to deny it, and if that happens, I don't know what to think anymore. But then he hangs his head.
I'm sorry.
I let out a breath. The conversation we had this morning was real. So you lied?
Yes.
He pulls off his glasses and rubs his eyes.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have, but...
He looks back up at me. Without his glasses on, the purple circles under his eyes look darker.
You don't know what it feels like to wake up every morning and your wife is sobbing for some guy who treated her like shit.
Graham,
I'm not the hero type.
He puts his glasses back on.
I'm all Clark Kent, no Superman. But I thought there was no harm in telling you I did something heroic for you. Something that might...
A flush fills his cheeks.
Something that would make you like me better.
When I came up the stairs, intending to confront him, I felt a mixture of anger and fear. Anger that he might have lied to me, and afraid that I imagined the whole thing. But now that he's admitted the truth, my heart goes out to him. He looks so guilty about the whole thing. And I can't even blame him. My life is ruined because of the accident, but his life isn't any picnic either.
Anyway, he heaves a sigh. I'm sorry. I should never have told you that. It seemed like a harmless white lie, but I shouldn't have done it.
No, I agree. You shouldn't have. I need to be able to trust the things you tell me. You can't lie to me.
I know. I'm so sorry.
Ever. He lays his right hand on his chest.
I swear to you, Tess, I won't do it again.
Our eyes meet again, and a little tingle goes through me. I almost feel like maybe I remember something about him. Some little moment between us. The first time he smiled at me. The way his glasses always slide down his nose and he has to push them back up. Tying his tie for him in the morning, then pulling him close for a kiss. You don't have to make up any stories, I say. I mean, look at what you do for me every day. You could have dumped me in a nursing home somewhere, but instead you do everything you can to make me happy. You are my hero. A smile creeps across Graham's face.
Of course I do everything to make you happy. You're my wife, and I love you.
He wrings his hands together.
Christ, I really want to kiss you right now, but I don't want to make you feel like...
Kiss me, I breathe. Graham bridges the space between us. He cups my cheeks and brings my face close to his. He presses his lips onto mine and my body melts into his. The kiss we had this morning was just a quick peck, but this is something so much more. When our lips separate, I'm trembling. That was nice, I gasp.
It sure was.
He leans in to kiss me again, but then I hear a ringtone. He pulls away from me and curses under his breath.
Shit. I've got a meeting I need to call into now.
He hesitates like he's thinking of blowing it off, then he shakes his head.
Busy afternoon. I'm sorry.
No problem. I'm not sure whether to feel disappointed or relieved. If not for his phone going off, I have a feeling this would have progressed to the bedroom. And despite this sudden urge of attraction I feel for Graham, I'm not sure I want that. I still barely know who he is. And despite whatever Harry did to me, it still feels like he's my fiancé, and being with another man would be cheating. I'll go downstairs. He nods and gives me a quick kiss on the lips before taking the call. Chapter 16. Graham orders takeout for dinner, which is a relief because it's obvious from breakfast this morning that he's not any kind of gourmet chef. We decide on an order of pad thai, pad see ew, and dumplings as an appetizer. When the food arrives in a giant paper sack, the smell of it makes my stomach rumble. It's hard to know what to eat when I can't remember what happened yesterday. How do I know if I indulged myself the day before and need to eat like a bird today? Or maybe I've been eating healthy and deserve a treat. How would I know? Don't think about that. Just enjoy the food. Graham carries the paper sack with our food in it to the black marble dining table. He drops the bag onto the table and rips it open. But before he unpacks it, he hesitates.
You better give me your phone, he says.
I stare at him. What?
Your phone, he repeats. Let me have it.
But why?
It's almost 8 o'clock. Why do you need it anyway?
He holds his hand out and wiggles his fingers.
Just give it to me so I can keep it safe.
I pat my pocket with my phone nestled inside. It's safe here. He drums his fingers on the table.
Right, but tomorrow morning you're going to have no idea where you left it. If you give it to me, I'll put it somewhere safe, and I'll give it to you first thing in the morning like I did today.
What he's saying makes sense, but I am reluctant to give up my phone. Considering I'm locked in here, the phone feels like a lifeline. Can't I keep it until it's time for bed? He presses his lips together.
You tend to get more confused as the evening goes on. Once, you put your phone in the freezer and it was wrecked.
Is that true? I don't feel at all confused right now. And like he said, it's almost 8 o'clock. What if my father calls?
He's on a cruise right now. He's probably not going to be answering your calls.
My father is on a cruise? That doesn't sound like him. I don't think he's been on a date since my mother died. Why would he go on a cruise? Graham shrugs.
Why not? Isn't he entitled to have some fun?
There's a subtext here, that other people in the world are out there having fun while we're stuck in this horrible situation for an entire year, and maybe for the rest of our lives.
Tess, will you just give me the phone?
He shoots me a look.
If I don't take it now, I'm going to spend half the morning searching for it. Let me put it someplace safe, okay?
I know I should just hand it over, but I'm reluctant. I'm not even sure why. Everything Graham has said makes sense. There's no reason why I shouldn't hand over my phone, but I also don't quite understand why I have to do it right this minute.
Listen, Tess.
He folds his arms across his chest.
If we're going to have an argument every night about your phone, then maybe it's a mistake for you to have a phone.
I jerk my head back. Are you threatening me?
I'm not threatening you.
His voice is maddeningly calm.
But I hope you can see my situation. It's an expensive phone, and you get confused easily. The doctor you saw after your head injury didn't think you should even have a phone, but I wanted you to have it so we could contact each other during the day when I'm away. Was I wrong?
I don't say anything to that. I just stare back at him. He lets out a sigh.
I know this is hard to wrap your head around, Tess, but you don't always know what's best for yourself. I have to make some decisions for you, and if you don't like it, then I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is.
He's talking to me like he's my father, but it hits me that if what Camila said earlier is true, this man is my guardian. Because of my head injury, he has the power to make all my decisions for me, and if he doesn't want me to have a phone, that's his prerogative. The thought of it makes me ill, but he's right. This is the way it is, and if I let myself get upset over it, I'm going to be miserable. I dig into my pocket and fish out my phone. I drop it into his waiting hand. Fine. He nods at me.
Why don't you unpack the food and I'll go plug this into the charger? I'll also grab us some plates and water, unless you want pomegranate juice.
I gag at the thought of pomegranate juice. Just water is fine. Graham disappears into the kitchen, and I'm tempted to follow him in there and see where he hides the phone. But I don't know why I am being so paranoid. It's not like anybody is going to call me tonight. I already spoke to Lucy. My father is apparently on an exciting singles cruise, and it's not like my company is going to be reaching out to me anytime soon. Graham has that under control. He's gone for several minutes. Long enough for me to have started eating some of the pad Thai noodles straight from the container with the plastic fork they provided. Ziggy appears next to me at the table, nuzzling my knee and begging for food. I take a little piece of beef out of the container and hold it out to him. He laps it up.
I told you not to feed him from the table.
Graham has finally reemerged from the kitchen, carrying 2 glasses of water and 2 ceramic white plates. When Ziggy sees him, he barks loudly. He bounds over and starts growling at Graham.
For Christ's sake!
Graham's face turns pink.
Tess, can you get your goddamn dog away from me? I'm going to drop everything.
I leap out of my seat and grab hold of Ziggy's collar. I stroke the smooth golden fur on his head, but he won't stop growling at Graham. Maybe it is a jealousy thing, like Graham said, but boy, Ziggy really does not like him.
Put him outside while we eat,
Graham says. I frown. It's cold out.
It's not that cold, and he's got his fur, and there's a doghouse out there. He'll be fine.
I just stare at Graham.
Seriously, Tess?
He drops the glasses of water and plates onto the dining table with a loud thump.
Do we have to argue about every little thing?
Before I can answer, Graham seizes Ziggy's collar and almost drags the poor dog into the kitchen. Ziggy's paws make a scraping sound as he attempts to keep his footing on the ground. I don't follow them because I can't even watch. Graham's sharp voice echoes from the other room.
Go! Get out!
The next sound I hear is the back door slamming shut and a key turning in a lock. Graham has now locked the back door. When Graham returns to the dining room, his face is still pink. He distributes the plates and glasses he brought to the dining table, one plate and glass for me, the other for him. Then he drops into his seat, a scowl on his face.
Sorry, he mutters. That dog is always begging at the table for food. I'm so sick of it. He never listens to what we tell him to do.
Maybe he needs obedience lessons, I suggest. But I don't really think that. From what I could see today, Ziggy is an incredibly well-behaved dog, save for the last few minutes.
Maybe.
I could call and make an appointment for lessons. He scoffs.
Yeah, when exactly would you do that?
Tomorrow morning, I start to say. But then I realize his point. I'm not going to remember to do anything tomorrow morning. When I wake up in the morning, God knows what my last memory will be. I probably won't even know who Ziggy is, same as this morning. But maybe I will. Maybe I'll remember. It seems impossible I could forget this crazy day. Graham takes a long swig from his water glass.
Let's eat.
I pile a stack of noodles onto my plate, and Graham does the same. For 15 minutes, we eat in complete silence. I wonder if that's what we usually do, or if the conversation flows readily. What can I talk about? Current events? The latest movies? Music? All those topics are difficult for me. I suppose we could talk about stuff from the past, but I can't remember any of our shared past, and I can't remember what conversations we've had before. I'm scared anything I say to him will be something I've already said dozens of times before. It's awkward. So instead, I decide to opt for some small talk. I rack my brain, trying to think of some mundane topic that will be at least a little interesting. The food is pretty good at this place, I finally say. Graham nods.
It's your favorite Thai restaurant.
I have good taste then. I had hoped he'd laugh at my little attempt at levity, but instead he furrows his brow.
Tess, I'm sorry I had to take your phone.
It's fine. You're right, I probably would lose it during the night.
Yes, but...
He looks troubled.
I'm your husband, not your father. I shouldn't be telling you what to do. But you do lose your phone whenever I let you keep it. I'm just trying to do the right thing.
I understand.
Do you?
Yes, and I do, sort of. But you say I usually get confused at night? He nods.
Very confused. Sometimes you even forget your own name.
A little shiver goes down my spine. But that's the thing. I don't feel... I had been about to tell him that I don't feel confused, but just as the words are coming out of my mouth, I realize that my tongue feels heavy. A wave of dizziness washes over me, and for a moment I almost feel too tired to pick up my fork and take another bite.
Tess?
I'm okay. I shake my head and my right temple throbs. I just feel a little tired. And that's when I realize my words have started to slur like I've had a few too many drinks. If I didn't feel so tired, I might panic. Despite my memory loss, I've felt fairly normal today. But suddenly, my brain feels like it's in a complete fog. Graham, my mouth feels like it's full of cotton. There's something wrong with me. Graham's eyes soften.
I told you, this happens every night. You get more confused as the evening goes on. That's why I wanted to put your phone away.
My eyelids feel almost leaden. I don't know how I got so tired. 20 minutes ago, I felt fine. Is this my brain shutting down for the night? And resetting, getting rid of all the memories I acquired today? I don't want that. I don't want to forget today. I don't want to forget Graham and Ziggy, but I already feel it slipping away from me. I take another gulp of water, hoping the cold liquid will clear my head. It doesn't help.
Do you still want to watch a movie?
He asks gently.
Or we can go straight to sleep if you'd like.
I don't want to go to bed. No, 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 I need to remember. There's something I need to remember. I take another sip of water. The last drops of liquid from the cup slide down my throat. It's almost becoming hard to swallow. Does this happen every night? I'm tired, I manage.
I know, Tess.
Graham reaches across the table and takes my hand in his. His hand is soft and warm. I'm lucky to have him. What would I do otherwise? I'd have to be in an institution. Thank God for Graham. Thank God.
Let's get you to bed.
I stare down at my water glass in front of me. I consumed nearly every drop of the water, but the glass isn't quite empty. Instead, there's a little white film in the bottom of the glass, like a fine white powder. Oh my God. Something was in my drink. Chapter 17. It's at the tip of my tongue, some memory that I can almost grasp, but not quite. I can almost hear the words coming out of my mouth. It's something I said before, to somebody else in the past. I think Graham is secretly drugging me. That white film at the bottom of my glass. Why is there a white film in my glass? It was just water, wasn't it? Graham is drugging me, Harry, every night. You've got to help me, please.
Tess?
Graham is staring across the table at me. There's concern in his blue eyes, but there's also something else, something menacing. I think of the digits scribbled on my arm, the person who contacted me this morning to warn me about him. Harry, it wasn't just my imagination. Those messages were real. Now I understand why Graham took my phone away. I'm going to get more water, I blurt out. Before he can protest, I jump out of my seat and stumble to the kitchen. I nearly trip over my right foot, but I make it there. Graham disappeared into the kitchen with my phone. It's got to be in here somewhere, and once I find it, I can call for help. I open drawers haphazardly. I'm not even attempting to close them again. What's the difference? He's going to know what I've been doing. He's going to know it when he sees the phone. My only chance is to find it before he comes looking for me. And I've got to call the number on my arm and hope Harry picks up. Or maybe I should just call 911.
For God's sake, Tess, what the hell are you doing?
Graham is standing at the entrance to the kitchen, his eyes wide behind his glasses. I yank open the drawer in front of me and look down, hoping my phone is inside. But it's mostly just rubber bands and pens.
Tess?
Ziggy is scraping at the back door, but he can't get in and I can't get out because the door is locked from the inside.
I asked you a question, Tess.
He arches an eyebrow.
What are you doing?
Nothing. My words are so slurred it surprises me. Even if I found my phone and called for help, anyone would think I had a severe brain injury. And Graham has the paperwork to prove it. Nobody would believe my story. I was just...
Time for bed. He says firmly. You need to go to bed right now.
My eyes dart around the kitchen, trying to figure out my next move. My options are limited. I have no phone, no way to escape this house. What can I do? I need the bathroom, I say. Graham grunts.
Fine, go.
I turn away from the kitchen counter, but before I do, I grab a pen from the drawer and stuff it into my pocket. Once I'm inside the bathroom, I consider locking myself in here, but I'm not sure what that would accomplish. And anyway, it looks like Graham has had the foresight to remove the lock. He could come in here anytime he wants, which means I don't have much time. I pull up the sleeve of my sweater, The number I scrawled on it has partially been rubbed off so that I can no longer make out the digits. Even though it kills me, I have to wash the rest of it off with soap and water. If I put on a t-shirt to sleep in, the numbers will be visible. I can't let Graham see it. If I leave myself a message, it has to be somewhere he won't see. I remember the word I found on myself this morning, on my upper thigh, above where my oversized t-shirt ended. Find. I hadn't had a chance to see it before the shower washed it away. But clearly, Graham hadn't seen it. Leaving a message for myself there may be my best shot. I'll have to keep it short, and I'll have to hope that tomorrow morning I see the message before I wash it away. My hands are shaking. Writing on my skin is difficult, especially since whatever Graham laced my water with is hitting me hard. I can hardly keep my eyes open, much less write legibly, but I've got to try. Everything depends on this. There's a knock on the door.
Tess, are you okay?
Just a second, I call back. I finish writing what I need to say. The words are small, but I can read them. I can only hope that I'll see them before they wash away in the shower tomorrow. I toss the pen in the garbage and yank my pants up just before Graham bursts through the door. Day 2. Chapter 18. If you relax and try to have a good day, you will be much happier. Just remember that the people around you care about you very much and only want you to be safe. Do what they say. You are in good hands. Trust me. Love, Tess. I look up from the letter in my shaking hands. That man is still standing in front of me. Graham, he says his name is. My husband, apparently. And if this letter is to be believed, we're happily married. He's been taking care of me since this horrible accident took my whole life away 1 year earlier.
Tess, he says.
I look up at his face. This stranger is attractive, I can't say he isn't, especially dressed in that expensive dark suit. But my husband? How can I be married to this man? Harry Finch is the love of my life. Harry and I are going to get married. He popped the question on my computer keys, and we're going on a honeymoon somewhere warm with lots of beaches. I look down at my left hand, expecting to see the ring Harry gave me. The modest little diamond that he saved up for over several months. But it's not there. Instead, there's a much bigger diamond, almost embarrassingly large.
I know this is hard to accept.
Graham settles down on the edge of the bed next to me. His hair is still damp from the shower, a few water droplets glistening in the short strands of his hair, which is darkened by moisture.
But after the initial shock, you're usually okay. You usually have a nice day.
I run my fingers through my dark hair. I can't get used to how short it is. And then when my fingertips touch my scalp, I feel something strange. A scar. A jolt of electricity goes through my skull and I jerk my hand away. Graham pushes his glasses up his nose.
They did surgery to remove some of the blood from your brain. That's why we had to cut your hair. But it's mostly grown back.
Gingerly, I reach for my scalp again. I trace the raised skin, where the hair will never grow again. There's a long scar in the shape of a C on the right side of my skull. God, I murmur. Graham attempts to reach for my hand, but I pluck it away. I'm not ready to let this stranger touch me, not yet. I look over at the fancy dresser across from the bed, at all the photos of me and Graham in our previously happy life. The pictures span our lives until a year ago, when I apparently was in a horrible accident that permanently damaged my brain. I look at the center photo of me in a gorgeous white wedding dress and Graham standing next to me, looking devastatingly handsome in a tuxedo. How come the glass is broken on our wedding photo? I asked. He looks up sharply, following my gaze to the wedding photo.
Oh, you dropped it yesterday. I haven't had a chance to get it replaced.
I stare at the broken glass in the photo, the scar on my head aching dully. Our wedding photo is broken, smashed to pieces. My face is a spiderweb of cracks. There's something unsettling about it. Why wouldn't he put the photo away until he could replace the frame?
Why don't you go take a shower?
Graham suggests.
I'll go downstairs and make us some breakfast before I have to leave for work.
I don't want to say this to him because he's being so nice to me, but I'm deeply relieved that Graham is going to leave the room, and even more relieved that he's going to work and will be out of the house all day. I don't want to be anywhere near this stranger. I return to the bathroom and shut the door behind me. I reach for the doorknob to lock the door, but that's when I realize there's no lock on it. When Harry and I bought this house, there was a lock on the bathroom door. I remember it distinctly. Where did the lock go? I suppose it was removed at some point. Maybe Graham felt it wasn't safe for me to be locked in the bathroom, given my situation. But I hate the idea that anybody could burst into this room at any moment. I force myself to look at my reflection in the vanity mirror. It's so strange. It's me, but not me. But also definitely me. The short hair is the most jarring part of all, but my face looks different in subtle ways. Ways that maybe only I would notice. A few creases around my eyes. My cheeks aren't quite as full, and there are dark purple circles under my eyes. I pull off my nightshirt and drop it on our shiny new toilet. I run my fingers over the bare skin of my chest. It's not that different from what I remember, but if I continue to have these memory problems over years and decades, that will change. Someday, I'm going to walk over to the mirror and see an old lady staring back at me. The thought of it brings on a wave of nausea. I double over, clutching my stomach. I need to calm down. It's like that letter I wrote said, if I relax and accept it, I'll be fine. And then I notice something on my thigh, black ink. Somebody scrawled a sentence on my thigh above where my nightshirt ends. It looks like my own handwriting, but it's hard to tell. I squint at the words, and a chill goes through me when I realize what they say. Graham is drugging you. Oh my God. I'm shaking so badly that I barely make it to the toilet before my legs give out beneath me. I sit there, staring at the message scribbled on my leg. I'm obviously the one who wrote it there. It's upside down the way it would be if I were writing it. Nobody else could have written that. And I wrote it in a place where I didn't think Graham would see. My husband is drugging me. I don't know whether I have a head injury, but either way, something is going on. He's doing this to me. I've got to get out of here. I've got to call the police. I peek outside the bathroom. Graham has gone downstairs. I forget about showering and slip outside the bathroom. I fumble through the drawers looking for something to wear. I find piles of women's clothes, but none of it looks familiar to me. All my old stuff is gone. My Weezer t-shirt, my fuzzy green sweater I always wore on St. Patrick's Day, my favorite pair of blue jeans with a giant hole in the right knee that Harry used to joke made me look like I was in a grunge band. Everything is gone. But I don't have time to care about any of that. I select a sweater and a pair of jeans, then slide my feet into a pair of blindingly white sneakers, so new that they still feel stiff. I look around for a wallet or any kind of money. I usually keep my wallet on the clothing dresser. But there's nothing. And my phone is MIA as well. It doesn't matter. I'll leave here with no money and I'll find the nearest police station. I'll tell them what I know about Graham. I'm sure they can do some blood or urine tests to find out if he's been drugging me or not. I try to be as quiet as possible as I walk down the stairs. I don't know Graham, and I don't know what he's capable of. Well, I know he's capable of poisoning me, but I don't know if he's the sort of person who would attack me if I tried to leave. Better not to find out. The living room is quiet. It looks so different from the way it used to look when Harry and I lived here. It looks like the living room out of a magazine about the lifestyles of the rich and famous. Where did the money come from to buy all this stuff? I smell bread toasting in the kitchen, the sizzle of a frying pan. Graham is occupied at the stove. Now is a perfect time to slip away. I reach the front door, my legs wobbling underneath me. I feel so lost. I don't even know how I'm going to get to the police station. I wish Harry were here. I need to find him. Wherever he is, I'm sure he'll help me. I don't believe what the letter said about him having done bad things. As soon as I get out of here, I'm going straight to the police and I'm going to find Harry. I reach for the lock on the front door, but then my hand stops, inches short. There's a lock, but not one that you turn from the inside. Instead, there's a keyhole. Oh God, this door is locked from the inside. I can't get out. I turn the knob, hoping this is some sort of mistake. It's not. I can't get out of this house without the key to the lock on the door. I'm trapped here.
Tess?
I whirl around. Graham is standing there holding a spatula in his right hand. He raises his eyebrows at me.
What are you doing, Tess?
I wipe my sweaty hands on my jeans. I need some fresh air. Could I go out?
Maybe after breakfast.
He nods in the direction of the kitchen.
Come on, let's eat.
I could scream. I could try to attack him. But what good would that do? I saw him without his shirt on. He's a muscular guy, and he would have absolutely no problem fending off any attacks from the likes of me. And even if I momentarily disabled him, I can't leave this house without a key. Maybe it's better for him to think I trust him, for now. Okay, I say. When I get into the kitchen, I have to blink a few times. Like the living room, the old skeletal kitchen that used to be falling apart at the seams has now been replaced with, well, my dream kitchen. Not that I'm the sort of person who has a dream kitchen, but God, this kitchen is gorgeous. I sit down at the kitchen island on one of the bar stools. There's a flat rectangular device on the table. What's that? I ask. Graham's lips twitch.
It's your phone.
A phone? And not just a phone, one of those iPhones. I always wanted one of those, but it was so far out of our budget. But now, not only do I have my dream kitchen, but I have my dream phone. But none of that matters. All that matters is that I can call 911 with this phone. I can let the police know that this crazy man is holding me hostage and drugging me and making me live in this house that is, well, gorgeous, but that's beside the point. I'm trapped here. And now I can call for help, but I have to wait for the right moment to do it. There's a scratching noise coming from the back door, which looks like it also has a keyhole the same as the front door. Graham walks over to the door and reaches into his pocket for the keys. He unlocks the door and a beautiful golden retriever bounds into the kitchen. The dog makes a beeline for me, and for a second I'm frightened until the dog licks my hand. What? I manage. What's this? Graham smiles at me. Despite the words scribbled on my leg, he doesn't seem evil. He seems like a nice guy. I mean, he's making me breakfast. And if he were keeping me hostage, why would he give me a phone? This doesn't quite make sense. But then again, nothing about this situation makes sense.
This is Ziggy, he says. He's our dog. Your dog. We got him after your accident last year.
Ziggy. I freeze at the mention of his name. Does Graham realize that's the same name as Harry's pet bird? I'm sure he doesn't. It seems like another secret message I've given to myself. I run my hand over the dog's fur. The effect is instantly calming. I once read that petting an animal can be a form of therapy. Ziggy pants up at me, his expression almost like a smile. I love him instantly. Graham scrapes 3 slices of bacon onto 2 plates, then gives me a piece of toast that's mostly black. I watched him cook our breakfast, but there's no chance I'm eating it. After all, I have no idea what he put in it before I came into the kitchen. Of course, if he's making himself a plate, it's unlikely there's poison in it. But maybe he's not going to eat it. He's just going to pretend to eat it. Or maybe he's been building up immunity to the poison by gradually ingesting trace doses over time. A ringtone echoes in the kitchen. At first, I think I've got a call, but when I look at my phone, the screen is still black. It's Graham's phone that's ringing.
Sorry, Tess. He swipes at the screen. I've got to take this one.
Graham wanders into the living room with the phone to his ear. His deep voice floats out of the room. It sounds like it's a call related to business. I wonder what he does. He's my husband, and I know nothing about him. I don't even know his last name. All I know is he's done something terrible to me. I look at the 2 plates of black toast and burnt bacon. They don't look appealing, but even less so with the knowledge that they could be tainted. Or at least mine could be tainted. I glance in the direction of the living room to make sure Graham's back is turned. Then I quickly swap the 2 plates. The next thing I do is pick up my cell phone. I've never used an iPhone before, but it's strange the way my fingers somehow know what to do. The phone unlocks under my thumb, and I know exactly which button to press to bring the screen up to make a phone call. And I know exactly who to call. I dial 911. 911 operator, what's your emergency? I lower my voice several notches. My husband is holding me hostage in our home. Please help me. In the other room, it sounds like Graham is ending his own call. I don't have much time. This is my address. I recite my address, and before the operator can say anything, I hang up. Graham strides back into the room, his phone still gripped in his palm. He adjusts his blue tie that matches the color of his eyes. I wonder how long the police will take to get here. I imagine them bursting into our house and Graham attempting to charm them, or maybe stammering excuses for what he's done. But the police won't buy it. I mean, the lock on the door clearly shows imprisonment. He can't hide that.
Everything okay, Tess?
He asks. Yes, of course. I force a smile. I have to pretend everything is fine, or else God knows what he'll do. What if it becomes a hostage situation? He looks pointedly at my plate.
You're not eating.
I stare down at the toast and bacon. The toast is charred to a crisp, and the bacon is black. I'd have to scrape off most of the toast to make it edible, and I'm nervous to eat it. Until Graham sits down across from me and starts digging into his food. It's not the plate he thought he'd be eating from, and he obviously thinks it's safe, so that means my own food must be safe. But I still have no appetite. Ziggy whimpers at my side. He licks my hand and looks up at me hopefully. I take a piece of bacon off my plate and offer it to him. He gobbles it up. Graham's jaw clenches.
I wish you wouldn't feed him off the table.
Sorry, I say, even as I'm passing Ziggy a second piece of bacon. I didn't know.
Right, but common sense, Tess.
Of course, you're right, I say, and I pass Ziggy another piece of bacon. Graham watches me, his eyes narrowed.
Aren't you hungry?
Just taking my time. I glance down at the clock display on my phone. It's only been a few minutes since I called 911. How long do they take to get here? I assume they would use sirens in a situation like this, or maybe not. So, how did we meet? The right corner of Graham's lips quirks up.
Actually, I saved your life.
Really? He nods.
We were in this restaurant, and you were a few tables away from me, and I heard you making a sound like you were choking. I turned around, and your entire face was turning blue. So I came over and did the Heimlich.
I scrape a bit of the black off the toast with my fork. I thought when people are choking, they don't make any sound.
Well, you did.
He glances at his watch.
Let me get you something to drink.
I watch as he gets up out of his chair and grabs a container out of the refrigerator. He pulls a glass from the cabinet above the sink and pours a big, heaping glass of blood-red liquid. What in the hell is that? What's that? I ask.
Pomegranate juice.
He brings the glass over to the kitchen island and drops it down in front of me.
It's your favorite.
I crinkle my nose. My favorite?
Oh, yes.
He sits down and takes another bite of his bacon.
You love that stuff. Yesterday, you had a second glass. I thought I was going to have to go out and buy more of it.
Is he serious? That can't possibly be true. I would feel like a vampire drinking that stuff, and either way, I'm not drinking anything he gives me. I want to be coherent when the police arrive. He arches an eyebrow.
You're not even going to try it?
I'm not thirsty.
Are you sure you're okay, Tess?
He tilts his head to the side.
You don't seem like yourself. Maybe we should go to the doctor.
At even the mention of seeing my doctor, a fist clenches in my chest. I hate going to the doctor. I've hated doctors ever since my mother's breast cancer diagnosis when I was a child. Just walking into a hospital makes me ill. No, I say. I'm fine, really.
Are you sure?
His blue eyes fill with what genuinely looks like concern. Apparently, he's an excellent actor.
Because if you're not feeling well, we should see the doctor.
I open my mouth to protest again, but before I can get the words out, the doorbell rings, followed by a loud rap on the door. It's the police. Chapter 19. My breath catches in my throat. I watch Graham's expression, which barely changes. He doesn't seem at all worried. Does he realize the police are at the door? Does he recognize he's about to get let out of here in handcuffs? He rises from his seat, dabbing his lips with a napkin from the table.
I wonder who that could be. Camila isn't coming for half an hour.
I have no idea who Camila is, but my heart is pounding as I follow Graham to the front door. The lights of the police car are flashing through the front windows, and he stops short at the sight of it.
Shit,
he mutters under his breath. Damn straight, that bastard is going to get nailed. He reaches into his pocket and pulls out the key to unlock the front door. A single officer is standing there in a blue uniform. My shoulders sag with relief. Thank God, this nightmare is about to be over.
Hi, Mr. Thurman,
the officer says. I don't know who he is talking to, but then I realize Thurman must be Graham's last name.
Sorry to bother you, but we got a 911 call from this house.
I grit my teeth. I don't understand what's going on here. Why is the officer so chummy with my husband? And why is he apologizing for responding to a 911 call that I'm being imprisoned? Why isn't he handcuffing Graham as we speak? Graham shoots a look in my direction.
Christ, Tess, did you call 911 again?
My mouth falls open, but I can't get any words out.
I tried to disable it on her phone, Graham says to the officer, but I couldn't figure out how. I'll have to give it another try. I'm sorry about bothering you.
The cop tips his head.
No worries, Mr. Thurman. I just wanted to make sure everything is okay.
With those words, I finally found my voice. Everything is not okay, I burst out. Look at the door to our house. This man is holding me hostage here. He's drugging me.
The officer exchanges a look with my husband. Mr. Thurman, it's okay, Frank, Graham says. I'll deal with this.
Deal with this? Tears jump into my eyes. You locked me into this house. I run over to the front door and point to the lock. Look at this. What kind of psychopath would do this to his wife?
Tess, Graham's voice is gentle. I'm not keeping you prisoner. The lock is for your own protection. You have a tendency to wander away. It's not safe.
Not safe? A tear escapes from my eye and I swipe at it helplessly. I'm an adult. If I want to leave the house, that's my right.
Mrs. Thurman, the policeman says.
I bristle at that label. Mrs. Thurman? I'm not Mrs. Thurman. I'm Tess Strebble. And by now, I'm supposed to be Tess Finch.
Your husband here is just trying to keep you safe. He's your legal guardian because of the memory problems from your accident. He's got the paperwork to prove it.
My hands ball into fists. You've seen that paperwork?
Yes, ma'am, I have.
My cheeks burn. There's blatant pity on the officer's smooth face. I look over at Graham and he just looks tired. It hits me that we have probably played out this exact situation many times before. Maybe dozens of times. Graham doesn't look scared. He just looks like he wants this to be over so he can get on with his day.
Camila will be here soon, Graham says to the officer. I'll make sure she takes Tess outside to get some fresh air. We'll be fine.
The policeman nods, and just like that, he takes off. He just leaves. Like Graham did absolutely nothing wrong, and I'm just some crazy woman who doesn't know what's going on. And the worst part is, I'm worried maybe that's the truth. As soon as he's gone, Graham turns to face me. His eyebrows are bunched together.
Tess, you can't keep calling 911. It's not right. They have better things to do.
I start to accuse him of trying to poison me, but the words die on my lips. He doesn't look like somebody who wants to poison me or keep me hostage. He looks like a man who is struggling to juggle work and a wife who has lost her memory. Maybe the message I left myself was wrong. Maybe I was just confused when I wrote it. After all, my husband drugging me? That's pretty crazy thinking. My whole body deflates. I'm sorry. I thought,
ah, Tess.
He comes over to me and almost looks like he's about to hug me, but then at the last second he drops a hand onto my shoulder. His is large and warm. Despite everything, it's comforting.
I know how hard this must be for you. Come on, let's go back to the kitchen and finish breakfast.
Mutely, I nod and follow him back into our kitchen. Chapter 20. I'm sitting on the sofa, watching television on our widescreen, high-definition television, while Camila cleans upstairs. Camila is my babysitter. They don't say it like that, she's the housekeeper, but it's obvious what her job really is. I'm not allowed to leave the house without her, only she has the key that opens the front and back door. But you know what? I'm okay. I took the advice I gave myself in my letter, and I'm trying to relax. I still don't understand why I wrote what I did on my leg, but it can't possibly be true. Graham is doing the best job he can. He's not trying to drug me. I don't believe that anymore. Ziggy is lying on the couch next to me, his head on my lap. I stroke his fur absently as I watch television. At first, I put on the news, curious at what events had taken place over the past decade, but almost immediately, it started to feel like a bad idea. The news was an onslaught of unfamiliar names of politicians and terrifying revelations about the state of the world. It was so unsettling. I changed the channel. Anyway, there was no point in upsetting myself with the news when I was going to forget it all by tomorrow anyway. So instead, I'm watching The Price is Right. I used to love to watch this show with Harry because he was insanely good at guessing all the prices. Even though the letter assured me Harry isn't a part of my life anymore, it's one thing I still can't wrap my head around. But watching this show makes me miss him a little less. The contestants are bidding on the price of an air fryer, whatever that is. It seems like something ridiculously extravagant, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit to find out there's an air fryer sitting in our own kitchen. But I have no idea what it costs. I can't even ballpark it. $1,000? $50? Nothing would surprise me. My phone is sitting on the coffee table, and it lets out a little buzz. My heart speeds up.